Welcome to another edition of the SGR Coffee Break. We're like three episodes away, if I remember correctly. Oh, look at that. Three episodes away from being 1 year old. We've almost got our big boy pants on now.
Oh, really? I didn't realize we started this last January.
Yeah, apparently. No.
Wow. Okay.
I forget when we... But hey, it's a thing. That's still going. We're episode 49. And I'm really sad. I'm so sad.
Why are you sad?
Because I went out and... Look! Lego Ghostbusters. Look at half a car. You got the ghost trap. You got Venkman. And then I was really excited because I didn't even realize this was out. Look! Doc Brown in the time train! The time train! So I go to... I was like, I'll just build this. While we're doing this. Yeah, I go to Lego. This is about the most I got out of the time train. Oh, wait. No. This is the farthest I've gotten on the time train build.
Because they don't have the instructions online.
Nope.
They want you to go play the game and go through that building.
Yeah, well, I don't want to do that building. I wanted to build this over my lunch.
Well, you're not going to today. And by the way, I just scrolled all the way down. Our first SGR coffee break was December 2nd.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Where did us go?
Can't believe we've been yammering almost every week for over a year now.
Oh, we won't be yammering next week. I will be in Wisconsin next week.
Oh, okay. Oh,
I forgot to mention that, Clyde, that we started talking about how long we've been blasting our listeners' ears off with that great intro.
I guess, and I'm glad that we are recording two tomorrow night so that we can do the game of the year next week to fill in our absence.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, there we go.
There. Way to just handle that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
It's why I'm the editor-in-chief. I make the decisions. I get shit done or something.
Get shit done. Oh, man, your little post yesterday from comparing your strategy guides, that got a lot of traction.
Yeah, I am actually really... I don't know why I hadn't done that before. Probably because I hadn't really done a video before, because it's really kind of hard to do those kind of comparisons over writing without, you know, taking a lot of pictures and scanning it. And even then, I can't exactly show everything that I would want to or be able to go as long. But yeah, I was asked, I think it was on my Just Cause 3 review, what the difference was between the paperback and the collector's edition for Just Cause 3, and there's not a collector's edition for Just Cause 3, so that was very easy to answer. But then he was like, well, is it ever worth the money? I'm like, well, that depends. So I just went and grabbed a random sample of some guides where I happen to have both the paperback and the collector's edition to show the various things that sometimes collector's editions will have, because I can't say for everyone that they're worth the money, because everyone has different needs or priorities, or maybe it's not worth, you know, because some of them are just the hardcover, maybe that's not worth it to them. So, but then another question that was posed to me this week was, the actual email, the subject was, Carrie, please say this isn't true, and it was a NeoGAF thread that was talking about how Future Press is not doing a Dark Souls 3 guide. And so I told him, I said, Future Press, I haven't really talked to them in a long time. I'm not sure why that is. I think it could be partly that they've lost, or that Prima and other publishers within the U.S. are taking over, because they can't distribute in the U.S. There's already a publisher taking over, taking that. And Prima is doing the Dark Souls 3 guide. And a lot of people are unhappy because the Future Press did Dark Souls, Dark Souls 2, and Bloodborne.
Mm-hmm. And they've always done a really solid job with those guides, too. Like, nailed. Yeah. Like, I told my brother-in-law when he started playing Dark Souls 1 or 2. Either way, I had the strategy guide with me, and he was, like, looking through it. And it actually, he went out and bought it, so that way he could actually finish beating Dark Souls when I left. So, you know, that's how good they are. And it's, I mean, yeah, it's a lot of reading. But, man, there's so much information in there. They've done so well on those guides. So to see that it's not Future Press, I'm worried about it to hear that it's, because Prima, I mean, their Fallout guide has been pretty solid, but
they're very hit or miss. And of course in the NeoGAF immediately like went down to Prima sucks, Future Press is awesome. Like, okay, that's the internet, and that's kind of the outrage. So, and that was, it was saying that, you know, that Future Press and Piggyback do much better guides than Prima does, which I found interesting because, you know, we're talking about two European companies versus Prima, which is an American company. And, you know, I've talked to people over at Prima. I've met with people at Future Press and at Piggyback. And the thing is, the difference between the companies, you know, there is the American versus European mindset as well. And the way that Piggyback and Future Press do it is that their belief is to do publish fewer guides and make them higher quality, which is why they don't, they generally, Piggyback stopped doing it, but Future Press doesn't come out with paperback guides. They're always hardcover because they're like, if we're just going to do three guides a year, this is what we are doing. And they put in like a ton of work into them. Like the Bayonetta guide is probably, to be honest, like probably one of the best guides in existence. And the guide came out nearly 6 months. That might be too long, but it came out a very long time after Bayonetta released.
Yeah, same thing happened with Bloodborne, if I remember correctly. It was like two weeks that the guide finally came out after the game. So
this was a lot longer than that, and that was actually because Platinum Games wouldn't give Future Press their approval. And it was, and as in the extent of information.
Oh.
Platinum Games is like, oh no, there's more to this. And so, like, I think like in the intro of the book, it talked about how they put in 6,000 hours into Bayonetta to come up with the guide. But so you have the different mindsets. For Prima, you know, they try to get out as many guides as possible, you know, depending on the licensing and what they're able to get versus, and I can't say quality versus quantity. I can't say that because that says that Prima doesn't put out any good guides, and that's not true. It depends on the writer. It depends on sometimes the designer, and it also depends, I know from talking to the authors, how much time they get with a game before release. Like, I remember at E3 several years ago, I was meeting with the Prima people, and they were talking how the writer for there was three writers for Skyrim, and one of the writers for Skyrim, which Skyrim was not out yet, you know, the Skyrim didn't come out till November that year, they said that he had already put in 400 hours into Skyrim or something insane like that. And that was in June, so about a good 5 months before the game even was out, and he already had about 300-400 hours in. So that was just one example where they actually were able to get it early enough, but I know some, and you can even tell by the way the guide is, and they only get it like a couple weeks ahead of time.
Yeah, I kind of felt like when I did the Tales of Zestiria, like, you compare that to Tales of Zillia, which I also did. Like, Tales of Zillia, solid guide, great content. And then Tales of Zestiria, it's like I had high hopes, and then it just...
Were they both Prima?
Yes, I do believe they... Yeah, they're both, yeah, Prima official guide, yeah. So, okay. I'm looking at my guides, and I'm just trying to compare everything that I got, and it's like, I look at the Brady games before and probably during their acquisition, I'm like, okay, that was a decent one, that was okay, and then I see all the Future Press ones, and I'm just like, solid, really good, and just...
Yeah, because so what I did in preparation for this, I pulled a bunch of samples of like something good that Prima Games has done, something horrible that they've done, and with Piggyback, and with, I'm going to start one with Brady Games, even though they technically don't exist anymore, because this guide, I hold, it's the third birthday. This, to me, is probably my bar for what a perfect guide is. This is the very first guide I ever reviewed. I was like, I have nothing negative to say about it because it was just presented so well. And the thing is, I fucking hated this game. I hated this game so much. But just because of the way that for the walkthroughs, you got those screenshots and what to do with every screenshot, and no space is wasted. Like, I mean, he has it called out when you're supposed to use certain weapons or certain abilities, and I mean, it was perfect. It was just absolutely perfect. There was no wasted space. As I already said, like, you know, they has, like, for every, like, hard enemy, like, screenshot by screenshot, when to do these certain abilities, when you should do this, when you should do that, you know. And I believe he also had call-out boxes for all of the, yeah, he had call-out boxes for all of the collectibles, too.
Nice.
So, I mean, it was just one of these, I just looked through it, and I was just like, oh, and the maps were solid. I mean, it was just, I mean, it's really, really well done. And, oh, the writer is Michael Owen, and I think he still writes every now and then. But this was one of those that, when I met with Brady at E3 after I published that review, they said they sent it to Michael, and they said that he turned so red. And he was like, oh, she just caught me on a good day. Like, apparently he's really, really humble, and, you know, so that to me, that's still, like, I still look at that one. Even though guides aren't framed that way, you can tell it looks older. It's funny. But it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. And I guess I'll just go ahead and skip to Piggyback. Contrast, I didn't get that one. So one of the Piggyback guides that I really hated was Assassin's Creed 2. And that was because it, there's a lot of platforming in that, a lot of explorative platforming. And the screenshots they had for where Ezio should go were like this big. And he would like blend into the background like, where is he? So where is that? I think I see like some bricks there. Is there something like that around here? Yeah, it was not a good experience. But I'll get to Piggyback here in a minute. But a good example of Prima's guides are their Zelda guides, which are always top. They're usually done by the same guy, Steve Stratton. He's been doing these Zelda guides forever. They're always just amazing. Again, like, you know, they have everything listed out by the runes, which is very important in the dungeons. And one thing I loved about what he did in Link Between Worlds was that he had you go explore the entire Lorule and find all the dungeons first.
Oh, nice.
So then all you had to do was warp between whenever you were ready. And yeah, it was kind of funny because I was like, I don't think this is the order you're supposed to do it just because of the way stuff would happen and you weren't. And so then there's these maps in here that had all the Mai-Mais. I did get all the Mai-Mais, which was a pain.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. You know, they has really good advice
If you didn't have the guide for that, just constantly having your ear out for the stupid little chirpy noise.
Squeak, yeah.
Oh, I was so glad when I finally got that last one. I was like, oh, I can enjoy the last little bit of this game.
And I have to say, like, the final dungeon with, like, all the platforms, and you go in this room, and you end up on this side, so you go in this room, and on that side, I would have thrown my DS across the room if it was not for this guide. It held my hand, and it got me across there, and it was really at that point, I said, you know, and it would have, like, now you can go here to get this treasure chest. I'm like, oh, fuck that! I want out. Let's just go. So this is probably one of my favorite Legend of Zelda guides. My first Legend of Zelda game to ever beat, which I've been told does not count, is Phantom Hourglass. And that was also thanks to a lot of hand-holding. Again, by Steve Stratton, because if you remember Phantom Hourglass, you get to go to the same dungeon, I don't remember how many ungodly times, because basically you unlock getting through different floors, so then when you go there, you just can't walk down to that floor. No. You got to go through the whole thing all over again. And the guide never once skipped through that. It never said, you don't remember how to do this, go back over here. It still went through, because with your different abilities, you might be able to do new stuff to get through the floors. So that was my example. Good one. Now, my bad one. Yes, Mass Effect. This was a terrible guide. This was a useless guide. And part of it is that the game is so straightforward, but there is a crucial part in the game that is never mentioned here, and it's the reason why I ended up killing my entire crew. Because there is a scene in Mass Effect 2 when the collectors come and raid your ship and pull people out, and they're gone, and Commander Shepard does this big speech of, we're going to go, we're going to take them back. But you don't have to go immediately. You know, you can still go explore. And I'm used to games that they seem like it's a hurry, but it's really not. So I just went and did all these side quests and went on my merry way, and I got there and everyone's dead. And I was like, what the hell? And I looked up, it said, if you don't go immediately, everyone dies. Never mentioned in here.
Brilliant.
The other thing this guide doesn't do is it doesn't give you tips on how to keep your crew members alive. Because one of the big things about Mass Effect 2 is that decisions you make can kill off your party. Like permadeath. They are gone. They are not in Mass Effect 3. This never tells you how to make sure everyone stays alive. So, yeah, I had to go look up online how to, you know, what was the best way to make sure. And it was like, make sure that you choose this person for this part, and make sure you bring these people with you for the final boss battle. This was not in here.
Yeah. As soon as I have to go to the internet for something, I'm like, oh, that's an instant point right off the bat.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Like, if we had sparkly unicorn poop rating scale that I keep wanting to implement, it'd be one pile of shit less.
So, and I'll go to Piggyback, which Piggyback has greatly improved. So, this to me is their worst one. Final Fantasy 13. Now, while they do give some sound advice for how you should put together your party, and where how you should focus on leveling up, this gives some of the worst advice ever for boss fights. I've told this story, I don't know how many times, it's even in my review, but there's this one... Did you play Final Fantasy 13? Mm-mm. Okay. There is this one boss that he, you know, there's many different phases, as Final Fantasy bosses are wont to do. And first he comes as this being that has these different orbs that can only be attacked by certain magic. You do that, and then he transforms again, and it becomes like this giant face.
Oh yeah, I have played. This is the one that I started playing, got 20 hours into it, and then my wife saved over my game.
Oh,
so this is so. I've played, as Blake would call it, the training session, but she's the one that I basically watched her get to that boss, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he turns into a giant face, and then you have to keep on, you know, beating up on him. And then he'll suddenly, like, get his face down like he's, like, grunting, and he will shoot a bunch of missiles, which will effectively wipe out your party if you are not prepared. The guide says use that time to heal up your party and get them buffed and get them prepared and ready, and then go back in. Well, when you have Hope as your healer, which is what the guide recommended you do, he moves there. Slowly, and I couldn't get everybody healed. I kept dying off. I probably played it for 2 hours, and I was like, motherfucker, like, what the hell is wrong with this? So I go online, and it said when he's doing the grunting, immediately have everyone go and melee his face, because the more you punch him, the fewer missiles he shoots. So guess how many times I had to fight the boss that time. Because when you just punch the shit out of him, he only shot 3 missiles instead of 12. You survive a lot better that way.
Yeah.
The other thing the guy doesn't tell you is that if you don't move your ass fast enough with that boss, he throws the doom counter on your party leader. Yeah. That's probably one of the worst things that this game ever did, was that if you didn't do a boss fast enough, they would throw the doom counter on. And the doom counter, I think, was 90 seconds. Well, shit. No, I couldn't. As slow as everyone moves, no, I couldn't do 90 seconds. I mean, I tore this guide a new one. I was so not happy. And the thing is, like, I talked to other people, and they're like, yeah, we couldn't defeat that boss either using the guide. Yeah. Yeah. That's a problem. And actually, one of the writers of this, like, came on the website. It's back when we were on Blogspot, and was pissed at me. He was, I don't know how many hours goes into guides. You can't judge this or that. I'm like, look, all I'm saying is that it was shitty advice. Sorry. But then they have come to, you know, Assassin's Creed Unity, which, one thing I do love about this guide, I brought it up yesterday, and something they've always done with Assassin's Creed, is that in the back, they, aside from all this, well, this is all art. Oh, anyway, I can't show it. In the back, they have, they do extensive research into the time period and actually go into the history of what's actually going on in that time period. And they do analyses of the prior games and how they relate to this. And then they do a final story analysis of this one, what happens in this one. So if you hadn't played these in a while, or you're like, I don't understand what the first civilization is, it goes into all of that in the end. And it's just incredible. And I think I just about dropped it. They also, one thing that Piggyback does very well, that I've always enjoyed.
Holy map.
Giant collectible maps. Which this was actually my bookmark, but I used it a lot to find those collectibles. Because this had so many collectibles, like the Enigma solutions, it actually has every single one. You know, where to find it, how to solve the riddle. So I was like, oh, fuck these riddles. Boom, boom, boom. So that was probably one of my favorite ones that Piggyback did. And I'm glad that Prima Games did a good job with the Assassin's Creed Syndicate guide. Otherwise, that would have sucked. I would have been like, okay, Piggyback needs to take it back over. But I don't think Piggyback is doing business anymore with the U.S., which is a shame. They told me that they weren't partnering with Prima anymore. They were working with Simon & Schuster, but I don't know if that can still get them over here, because as we said before, it's all about who's already doing a guide. Whereas in Japan, it's open market. I don't know why there's, and I think it's about the licensing here. Yeah. It's that the developers only will work with one license at a time.
You know, I do miss the days, but back in the 90s, where you had the official guide and then you had all the unofficial guides, and you always had to look through to figure out which one was like the better guide.
I have about 4 different Ocarina of Time guides, because they're all from different publishers.
Yep.
And I have to say that Nintendo's official one is the worst one.
Yeah. I remember looking back and like, you know, we waited for magazines, you waited for Nintendo Power to do one, you waited for I can't even remember all the companies that were back in the day. I just remember sitting around. I saw a bunch of them when I was looking for an image for my article last week. I was like, I remember that guide. Oh, I remember having that one too. And like, somebody had posted a picture and just had all of these guides, just a massive amount of guides. And just like, yeah, I remember, you know, back in the day, just now we're down to like fucking Prima, and that's pretty much about it anymore.
Yeah. So then I was going through my Future Press, and I was like, what Future Press guides do I have that are bad? And the answer is none.
I
don't have any. So I pulled out some of my favorites, the Portal 2 guide. Well, it was just so helpful. I mean, look at the bookmarks. How cute is that? Little ribbon, orange and blue bookmarks. But, you know, any time that I was about to beat my head senseless against the wall trying to get through this game, this thing had it, you know, screenshot by screenshot, just perfect.
Yep.
It was so ungodly helpful. And, you know, of course, it was really funny because it would tell you, it's like, please don't try to look through this until you can't do it on your own.
Yeah.
Because it spoiled stuff, and not that it meant to, it just did. Like, even has like the co-op help, but that was like, no, please try to do this on your own. because you have a friend, you know. So
you have
that
a
one.
Friend in me.
And then Deus Ex, Human Revolution. One thing I loved about this guide, not just the little ribbon, I love those things Future Press does, is the ribbon bookmarks. The thing I really loved about it is that for every area, every side mission, every main story, it had 3 strategies. Completely stealthy, non-lethal takedowns, and lethal takedowns.
Nice.
Yeah. So I mean, it. So no matter what your play style, and of course sometimes I would just use it and kind of combine them. So, but it also really helped with like some of the discussions that you would have with people, because you couldn't get any, you would get locked out of future side missions if you didn't complete a conversation one way or another, and so it really helped with that. Of course, it didn't save the game's terrible ending, but you know, it. I don't know. It's probably because of this that I became tolerant, more tolerant of stealthy based games. Because this one showed me, like, yes, you can do things by action, but why don't you try it this way as well? And I was able to see how you can combine your killing everybody, because it's just much easier to walk around when everyone's dead, with stealth. You just stealthily take them down, because otherwise you become overrun, and that's not going to get you very far. So, that was probably one of my favorites. And then, of course, there is the best guide of them all, Bayonetta. And it got damaged in shipping, which is a shame. But yeah, that does mention 6,000 hours. Yeah, so it's unreal. But yeah, I mean every unlockable, because this game, you know, you had unlockables that only happened in certain difficulty levels. So if you wanted to get all those ravens, well, you had to play through it like all, and it had strategies for getting that pure platinum on everything. And oh, that's kind of cute. You kind of see that. It's her. It says bring it. Because I the thing is, like, I had a hard time with just lost the binding. Crap.
Should be playing with it,
I guess. But it also would have, like, if it would give you strategies for, you know, getting past, like, a certain area, and it would be like, if you're having trouble, check out our video to show how it's done. So that is probably one of the first guys I've ever seen do that, and that was always very helpful. And actually, I had met with the head of Future Press at E3. I was like, okay, I love the guide until the final boss, and it didn't mention that the final boss does this one thing. And he was like, yes, it does. Like, no, it does not. And we sat down, and he, like, pulled it out. And he's like, no, look, there it is. I'm like, oh my God, you're right. And I went back home and the pages were stuck together. So that's why I had mentioned it. So, I mean, it's one of the best guides. And of course, you know, they sold out quickly, and I could sell this for hundreds of dollars, but I ain't. Although I think I just devalued the price with the binding that just popped loose. But, you know, this is an amazing guide. Future Press, they have never let me down yet.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, yeah, the worry about Dark Souls 3. I can say this. You know, because Future Press, they always got out the Souls and the Bloodborne guide. I mean, Bloodborne was 2 weeks later, but they've always been right up, you know, with the game. And then there's always DLC that comes along with these games, so maybe, you know, if as long as they get the original guide good, and they can knock that out, I think one saving grace of Prima taking over is if on their digital guide they update it as the DLC comes through.
Mm-hmm.
That part, or because, like, you know, you had Dark Souls 2, and then you had a couple DLCs come through, and then you had Dark Souls 2, the Scholar. Sins of the Scott, whatever it was.
Right.
But, you know, Prima, because they constantly, if you get their collector's edition, I think even on the paperbacks now, they're just like, here's your free e-guide. You know, as long as that e-guide gets updated, that part could be kind of like a saving grace, but we have to wait and see how that plays out, because I mean, we got to get Dark Souls 3 first, and then we have to wait for the DLC, and then we have to wait for the inevitable, here's everything grouped together.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fucking Dark Souls. It's the one game that I just never stop complaining, that I'm just like, okay, well, I'll buy this edition, too. Even though I own all the DLC, and I already know it's all just the same thing. I'll just get this edition, too. Call it a day.
You have a Dark Souls problem, dude.
I do. I do have a Souls problem. So
it's okay.
Man.
sort of.
I can't say this, that if Future Press does end up doing a Dark Souls guide as well, but it's just limited to the EU,
you're going to import it?
There's probably a good chance that I will end up importing it. Cause
yeah, I mean, I do have Amazon.co.uk account because I've had to import stuff like that before. So
yeah, so I don't think that I would have a... Just because, like, Future Press, their guides have always been so just spot on. They're not... They don't contain a whole lot of flashy little bits and pieces, but that when they, the stuff that they put in that guide just it's so spot on, so good. Yeah.
And you have to forgive any typos in there because English is their second language.
Yeah.
They're based in Germany.
Yeah. I generally overlook typos and stuff as long as, like, if the guide is getting me to do what I got to do.
Right.
Then, you know, especially on those, especially on bigger guide, like Fallout 4, like, that's a lot of information to cram in and process and eat through, and you know, the Souls games, that's a lot of information to process and go through. It just, yeah,
the same thing, like with Xenoblade Chronicles, like I really do need to sit down with Xenoblade Chronicles X because I'm seeing so many complaints on the same NeoGAF thread. They were going off about how the guide is useless, and I don't, maybe I haven't put in 200 hours. I want to ask these people, what are you looking for in this guide? Because it hasn't had, granted, I have not played much more than about 15, 20 hours, but I haven't gotten to a point yet where I'm like, well, this doesn't tell me how to do this. I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah. That's what the problem...
I don't know.
That was the problem with the Tales of Zestiria one, is that stuff was just not there.
Well, but I haven't gotten to that yet, so I don't know. I need just to sit down with it and just be like, well, what questions would I have for, you know, a guide this magnitude? And every time I ask some, and I've asked somebody because someone was posting on our YouTube channel when I showed off the Xenoblade Chronicles X guide. He said the guide was terrible, and I said, how? And he couldn't give me an answer. So like he's like, well, I guess it's okay for the Collectopedia. I was like, but how is it bad? And it was even, I've even read some of the Amazon reviews, and all they say is this sucks. I'm like,
yeah,
that's not a review. You've got to say, if something is bad, you have to say why it's bad.
Yeah, if you're going to critique something, you got to actually critique it. You can't just this sucks.
You can't just call it shit and move on. That's the Blake review.
Yeah.
Actually, no, his review is, it's fucking terrible.
Yeah. Oh Blake. So
I mean, like, I'm not trying to be 100% in defense here over Prima, you know, because I think one reason why I've had such a good relationship with them is because I'm honest. You know, I guess I feel guilty when I write stuff and I'm like, this was terrible. But that's just me because I hate saying bad things about people or to people. But, you know, but you got to be honest. And I guess for me so far, with Xenoblade, I'm just really curious why it's so bad. And, well, I mean, if it's bad, it's bad. But I just haven't seen that. You know, but I guess we all think things are bad for different reasons. Like, you know, I got on the Infamous 2 guide because I felt like it didn't properly handle this one mission where you had to follow this thing. And it would just suddenly dart directions. You'd be like, shit, where'd that go? And I wish it had made a map to show you so that you could reorient yourself if you couldn't get there. And so I talked about that, and someone's like, what is your problem? You just couldn't follow it? I'm like, well, that's the thing. No, I couldn't just follow it, and I would get lost. It's just, you know, little things. You know, I'm not the best gamer in the world. I've never claimed to be.
Yeah, people just like to be mad on the internet.
Well, there's... there is that, but you know, and I have had some guides, like I just said, Final Fantasy 13, that just totally led you astray. It set you up to die, because I did a lot of times.
Like I said, if I got turned to the internet, which I had to do with Tales of Zestiria.
Yeah, that's
when you got turned to the internet.
Good.
As soon as if I got to do it more than once, it's bad. Especially if I have to read through game facts. GameFAQs was great way back in the day, but now, like, trying to read people's descriptions, some of those are terrible. I just YouTube that shit. Somebody's always got something on YouTube.
Right. It's the wave of the future.
YouTube, the next strategy guide. Anyway, Carrie.
Yes.
Because
I haven't talked enough. What's up?
What have you been playing?
See, I played some more Gauntlet Slayer Edition, which I know we're going to talk about this week as part of our Book of the Month. I actually finished the campaign last night. I have to say, after the first boss, that was, you know, actually pretty tricky to figure out, the next two were kind of a disappointment.
Oh, yeah?
They were very straightforward.
I've just been grinding for gold and just trying to build up my characters just to see. So I got that second boss unlocked and it's ready to go, and I'm just like, yeah, I'll just throw it in hard mode now and go up here and go farm some stuff. And
man, I can't imagine playing this game on hard by myself. I had to bail out of normal by myself. Like, I can do normal with other people, but by myself, holy shit, no. I just, although I am now playing as an elf, because the ranged is really the way to go. You don't get surrounded.
Yep.
So I played with Blake this week, and he was a warrior, and I was, you know, ranged, and the poor guy just died so many times because he gets surrounded. You know, there's only so much you can do as the warrior. And I got to when we were at the first boss, and we both died, and we had one skull coin, and he was like, Carrie, you take it, because he knew that I'd be able to get away from people fast enough to build up for that next skull coin so he could come in.
Freaking kiting is the way to go, man.
Yeah.
kite the shit out of those enemies. The first thing I kept doing. Oh, yeah. I tried the Necromancer. It's really hard, especially with that range distance.
The wizard is all kind of like the Magicka style and putting in spells. I'm like, oh, no, fuck this. I got to think too much.
The first thing I always do every time, like when I get to a new room, is the first thing I do is look at it and try to figure out where my path of kiting is going to be.
Yeah.
So, and then every once in a while, you know, they throw extra shit in there for you. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's only one cave I haven't done, and I died quickly, and I didn't go back and redo it because it scared me too much. Like, I actually literally jumped like too many times.
Is it the spider cave?
Mm-hmm. It's like the Queen's Chambers.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, I'm already battling all these little baby spiders, and all of a sudden, two queens just jumped down on my head, and it literally scared the crap out of me. And I killed one, and then two more dropped down, and I was like, nope! Then I think they both jumped on me, which was insta-death. And I had already lost a skull coin by then, so I'm like, yeah, I might need some help with this one. If somebody helped aggro them while I'm a little baby.
Oh, Gauntlet, you're such a good
kid. I did look at the leaderboards yesterday, because those are for the Endless.
Yeah.
Someone has already gone through, like, it's either 21,000 or 2,100 floors. Like, dear God.
Wow.
Yeah, that was the number one. It was like, maybe it was just 2,100, like 2,176 or something like that.
People be addicts.
I could see this game being on a speedrunner.
Oh, yeah.
Eventually.
SGDQ.
Right.
Make it happen.
So, and I've also been playing Assassin's Creed Chronicles India, which is not as good as China.
Oh. That's a letdown, because China was so damn solid.
Yeah. They removed the scenes, you know, where you're running out of an area that's on fire, because I hated those, and they replaced those with tailing missions, which are just so much more fun.
Oh, tailing missions are almost as bad as timed missions.
They are the worst, because you have to execute the platforming perfectly to do it. Like, you cannot make a mistake, or you will be too far behind. But not only is there the platforming, but you can't waste your time trying to figure out how to kill other people. You just have to run past them, hope you don't get seen, and yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah, there's that. There's the, they almost expect you to have played China, like, I don't know, a week or so before, because it builds on everything from China, and there's not even really a tutorial. There's an optional tutorial, and if you take it, it goes through all those moves that you learned in China, for all those 6 hours, 6 or 7 hours you played China, all of those in 10 minutes. And then, by the way, we got new moves, you know, to show you. And there's exploding traps that are insta-death if you accidentally step on them.
Well, that's a great time.
Yeah. No.
This makes me sad. This makes me sad because China was so good.
China was so good, yeah. I mean, I gave China like a, I think a 9-something, and I gave this a 7.
Ouch.
No. I gave it a 6-8, that's right. I gave it a 6-8, because, yeah. Just, yeah.
Okay, then.
Yeah, the other one I've played is the Deadly Tower of Monsters.
Yeah, what is this?
But this is an Atlas game, which as soon as Atlas popped up, I'm like, well, I'm either going to love or hate this, because there's nothing in between for Atlas, and... you know, like all those B movie, those B sci-fi flicks. That you see in Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yep.
It's like you're playing one. And the thing about this is that it's supposed to be like a movie from the 60s or 70s that now has a DVD release, and so this so it's director commentary as you're playing, which is what really makes the game is the director commentary.
Oh my God, this sounds hilarious.
So, I mean, and it's really, really funny. Like, I'm laughing all the way through it, because he'll talk about it. He's like, you see how those trees, they look plastic? It's because they are, and I used them in this other film. And like, they have these stop-motion dinosaurs, and...
Oh, my God.
There's, like, a monster made of sparks. He's like, oh, that spark monster, that took the artists forever to do that. Probably because they made it red, because I forgot to tell them blue, and then I made them work all night to make it blue, and, well, we were up all night. Well, they were. I need my 10 hours sleep. And, like, he'll even point out, like, the bad puppetry effects, and so you got these three characters who are, they overact, and, you know, it's just really bad, and...
So what platform is this on? Is it on Vita?
It's on PC and PlayStation 4.
Okay. God, this is... All right, I'll have to put this on a wish list then and wait for it to go on Steam sale then, because...
Because it's a... I mean, I'm actually tempted to make this my book of the month. Instead of what I was going to do. So, just because, I mean, this is one of those, like, I think I put in my review for PlayStation Lifestyle, it's so bad, it's good. You know, those movies that are so incredibly bad. And it goes into... every cliche imaginable, cliche and trope from that era, like, and there's nuclear ants, and there's a King Kong ape, and, you know, crazy robots and clones that even, like, do a callback to the original 1960s The Fly, and, I mean, it's, and, like, he'll say things like people, he'll say things like how people, like, they were looking for plot holes, and he'll explain how it's not a plot hole. Like, he'll say, like, people are wondering why these clones, they didn't have the glass bubbles that our heroes have to have to breathe, and it's because they're clones. It's not because we ran out of budget and couldn't get glass bubbles for everybody. Or, like, my favorite line, I couldn't believe you said this, I was like, wow! Because one of the characters is female, and she first enters the scene, she saves the main character, Dick Starspeed, from, like, this King Kong monkey. And he's like, people don't appreciate how forward-thinking this was. I mean, a woman saving a man? That just doesn't happen. Not in real life, not in movies. And then later on, he says, and I got a screen capture of this, he says, well, I was just thinking, if you're going to hire based... not based on acting merit, why not make it a hot female? Oh, God.
Atlas, just stirring that pot. Just stirring that pot. Oh, Anita Sarkeesian, here you go. Have your way.
It's amazing. And it's got some Metroidvania aspects to it as well, because you don't get certain abilities until later, but you can go back down to the lower floors to, you know, get more collectibles. And Yeah.
Sounds like an Atlas game, though. Sounds like a
good time. It's like, it was one of those, I was like, I'm going to hate this, and it grew on me. It really grew on me, and I really enjoyed playing it.
Nice.
So, and it actually does have where it looks like it was filmed, like when you see flying monsters, you can see the strings on them, and like the resolution is like it's a VHS tape.
The only way
and if you skip through a cutscene, it actually makes like it's fast forwarding.
Oh, the only way this could get better is if like it had the little tape glitches every once in a while.
There is one.
Oh, good. Oh, well
There
then.
is one, because it's actually at an important part where the two main heroes are meeting for the first time, and he's like, "Oh, that glitch there, that's just like, we just missed some of the best writing imaginable. Oh, well."
Oh my
What's
gosh.
great is when you die. He's like, "Okay, that was an accident. We got the wrong clip, and you put in the right clip." Or if you don't move, he'll be like, "Well, this part right here, we decided to be fun just to have the actor not do anything."
Oh my God. All right.
Yeah.
I'll have to fire up, I'll have to fire up Steam after this, just to put it on the list.
Yeah, this is actually the game where I went on my rant about PC gaming.
Okay.
So, and I hated the games. I was like, the controls, it's so janky, like it's clunky and he doesn't move right and rawr. And now I'm like, and after playing it on the PS4, when I got that code, I'm like, oh, it's my video card. That's why it was doing that. It wasn't the game.
Carry,
Well, see,
carry.
it's a good thing they gave me a PS4 code, otherwise I would have ripped on the game needlessly. See?
Yeah, well, there you go. And then people would have called you out on it.
I know. And I would have deserved every second of it. I'm learning, dude. I'm learning. All right? I got the new video card in. I'm
Well,
going to
thanks.
buy some RAM.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Buying that G-Skill RAM.
Right. So, what have you been playing?
I look over here. Get the easy ones out of the way first. Gauntlet Slayer Edition, still playing that. No, I've not completed the game. I for some reason I'm like grindtastic. I just like going to old levels and grinding off
It
money.
is fun. Like Blake and I played together, and because he hadn't played yet, and he's like, "This is a lot of fun."
It's like,
Like,
well,
yeah, it
no shit,
is.
no shit. Playing some more Fallout 4. It's Fallout. I still don't have beds for my settlement, so fuck them. They can build their own beds. I'm out saving the
Why
fucking.
don't they build their own beds? They got wood.
I'm out trying to save the Commonwealth, and they're bitching because they don't have beds. You know, it's only
There
so
is the ground.
that there is only so much your hero can do by pissing people off. So anyway, yeah.
Can you
So
even can you order them to build beds?
no, it's all up to you because it's your settlement building, right? So it's up to you to build
Man,
your
even
settlement.
in this war of mine, you can tell people to build beds.
No. Not in this one, and that's why. That's because. So that's why you see all the every once in a while there'll be an article that shows up that somebody built this in Fallout 4 for their settlement. And it's because, literally, you have to build your settlement and make it do whatever it is. So,
So, did Bethesda like, hey, Minecraft's a cool thing?
yeah, pretty much. It's kind of. I don't. I you know I thought I'd really enjoy that part,
People
but
like SimCity.
I was like, whatever. Anyway, it's Fallout. I'm enjoying the story more. I thought I'd actually enjoy this the settlement building, but it's like I have to go around and collect all this crap, and I actually enjoy the weapon building part a lot more. I'm like, this is fantastic because like all the weird shit that you can do with your weapons, it's like a
Well,
pool.
but isn't that kind of the appeal, though, of Fallout, like in Skyrim? Like, it's about finding your niche, what you like to do, and you can go and do it. Like Blake, he wants to build this gigantic settlement, so he can go do that.
Yeah, but settlement building was just brought into this. Usually, it's just been walk around the wasteland and explore. Like, do this.
I guess what I'm trying to
So.
say is that they tried to bring in more things to get more
Oh.
people to find their niche.
I mean, apparently,
I mean,
Blake
they did
is.
that in Skyrim. They brought in the, what is it, the hearth?
Oh, yeah.
Hearthfire, whatever it was called. Yeah, so that you could, and I remember Jen Bowser just going nuts, like, I can build my own house and decorate it. I'm like, okay.
Okay. My favorite part is just the weapon building, just because it's so off the wall. Like, you get a pool cue, and then you put, like, a chainsaw at the end of it. I'm just like, okay.
So it's like Dead Rising.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome. So, anyway, I'm still playing that. Like, I think I'm about third, maybe halfway through the game now. Just trying to plow through it. Just being a dick to everybody I meet. It's great. Every once in a while, you gotta.
Being you.
Yeah, be me. Every once in a while, I gotta do a quick save and then just shoot people just to see what happens. Just it's like you do. Play some more StarCraft 2, Legacy of the Void, which this still makes me sad that I look down at my strategy guides and I have StarCraft 2, StarCraft 2. I'm missing that third one. I have Terrence, I have Zerg, and then they were just like, you know what? Fuck it, we're done.
You know what? You look over at my shelf. So I have Kingdom Hearts, Kingdom Hearts 2, Kingdom Hearts 358 Days by 2, Kingdom Hearts Birth by Sleep, Kingdom Hearts Dream Drop Distance, Kingdom Hearts 1.5 Remix. No 2.5. They decided not to do one. I'm like, no, you can't have the one without the two.
Right? And this is like a trilogy. I'm just missing. Anyway. Legacy of the Void is actually really good. I'm very much enjoying the storyline to that. And it's actually gotten me back into doing the whole, like, I want to research how to get all my... build my army a little bit better. Anyway. Also, loaded up some more Mortal Kombat X for the first time in a while. Because... we're getting new characters soon. Yes, we're getting the Xenomorph, and we're getting the Cyborg, which every time they show the Cyborg, that changes. All I can think of is that goddamn Honest Trailers, and just keep going, lazy, lazy, every time they change. Because it's slapping a new coat of paint. And then today, I just saw that they announced the XL Edition, so yeah. It's like everything. And then at the very end of that video, they had a pit fatality, and I was like, ooh, are we getting new stages now, too? Are we going to get pit fatalities, finally? Anyway. So I'm playing that, getting the dust
off.
Man,
I missed that game.
Getting the old rust off. Actually, then I also watched, the Kumite in Tennessee, or Kit, happened last weekend, so I was watching just some straight-up crazy
MKX
plays.
Finals this weekend.
Too bad I'll be traveling, so I'll have to catch that on VODs. Anyway. And then the last two. One of them's pretty interesting, one of them isn't. I was looking around, so there's this game called Tharsis, and it's like a... they called it like a roguelike game. But essentially, you have a crew, you're in a spaceship, you're going to Mars, you have 10 weeks. So you have this nice little bar at the top of your screen, 10 weeks. And every week, something happens to your ship. So you got to start figuring out, like, where am I going to move my crew around? Got to fix this problem. My crew's getting stressed out. I'm running out of food. After you do all this stuff with your crew, so you get, like, four crew, move them around. They all get one action. They do their thing. And then at the end of that, your ship then takes damage. And then a new set of events happens, and you gotta start dealing with that. So, like, it starts off, you have one module that, catches fire, so you send crew up to that. And then the next time, and it's all random, so the next time I had, like, three modules get hit. The thing that people don't like about this game is, A, the randomness of the events. Because sometimes you get, like, one module that ends up getting hit, and other times, like, I've had three modules get hit, and one of them gets hit pretty badly. And you gotta do, like, you have to go save your garden area. I forget what the module's called, but you go save that because that's how you get food, right? So you want the food, so that way you can do this. And this is all based on dice rolls. Every person has a row of dice, and they lose one per turn. And, like, so that's where the food comes in, because then they get more dice rolls, and then they have life. So the dice can either live by the die or you die by the die. And it is not a easy game. It beats the shit out of you. I think the longest I've made it is 5 weeks. I've made it almost to Mars. And the RNG in this game is terrible. It's so brutal. And
that's really a shame.
And I'm like, it's a cool concept. And I don't know if it's just that I'm not, because there's times where I'm just like, I gotta let this module just damage my ship some more, because I can't, I gotta deal with this other one that's even rougher. And then, you know, like, after you complete it, and if you successfully do something, it's then like, well, now you gotta do these sciencey things, and now you gotta send people out to do other side projects, and that increases their stress, and when they're stressed out, then shit doesn't get done so well, and it gets really hard when you have one dice left. You know, you have like,
Blake would love this because he loves micromanagement games.
So, it was a mixed review on Steam, and I was just like, curiosity. I was just like, it's it's such a crazy mechanic. Like, the mechanics of it just sound very interesting to me. And it's all you gotta do is survive 10 weeks. You think, oh, that's gonna be easy. But when your entire ship is in distress and everybody's only got one dice roll because they're all stressed out. So, yeah.
I bet Blake would like it.
I don't know. Maybe not. It's,
well, he likes micromanagement games like that.
So, it's just, when I was reading the reviews, it was like, don't, and even the game says, don't expect everybody to live. Not everybody lives, or expect people to die or something like that. And it's like, okay, challenge accepted. Yeah, and I think I've played it, how many times have I tried to go to Mars now? Probably 15, 20 times, and I've never made it. And there's, even if
there's something about it, though, that's made you try to replay it, I guess.
It's just so, it's just such an interesting mechanic, right? Like, save your ship, all you gotta do is make it 10 weeks. The dice roll thing, I was like, okay, the dice management is cool. But the game is just so, you know, like I said, sometimes I'll play it and I'll have like one or two things happen, and there's other times where it's just like the ship is just constantly getting slammed, and I'm just like, I'm not making it 2 weeks. So, whatever. So that was a bit of a risk. So, this next game, Evercron Legacy, just came out a couple of days ago, and I learned about this because yesterday I was doing some back end work on my website, and so I loaded up my Elite Dangerous directory on Twitch, and one of the guys that I always watch for Elite Dangerous was playing this game, and I was like, well, what the hell? So I start watching them, and it's basically it's like an Elite Dangerous. It's a space sim. And you build your ship. There is no predefined ships. You just build your ship. You make your money. You go to space stations and put on parts and do whatever you got to do. What really started to hit me was, A, you can't look at the graphics because they're like 10 years old. But apparently there's a huge modding community because there's a prior game to this, Evercron Mercenary, I think is what it was before. What got me is that this is a one person job. One dude coded everything on this game.
Oh, wow.
And just recently,
like Axiom Verge.
Yeah. Except for he brought on like two people to help him do some modeling, apparently. So I was watching, so I picked it up and I was like, okay, let's start playing this just to see. And the amount of small details that he has put into this game are just mind-blowing. It's the first space sim that actually has inertia. So if you turn off your dampening system, you can basically just like fly someplace and just turn off your jets and just coast, which really makes it interesting for dogfighting because you have to start planning.
You can actually drift.
Yeah, you have to plan that out because, like, if you go to make a sharp turn and you don't have dampeners on, and even with dampeners on, it still takes a little bit of time to make that turn. But if you turn it off, you're like, yeah, okay.
No.
So
that doesn't sound like fun to me.
So there was that, and then it had planetary landings. Like, it took Elite Dangerous, you know, 6 months just to even bring that in. And this guy's, you know, you just, any planet, you just fly right into it. And then on top of that, you can fly down to that planet, and then you can build yourself a base. Wherever you want, just build a base if you have the money and resources. Just go ahead and build your base, and you can dock there, and you can do training. Oh, you want to build a space station? Go ahead. Just find an empty spot, build a space station. Have at it. Do what you gotta do. So, the interesting thing is that it's single player and multiplayer. The multiplayer is you have to find a server to play on. So now that the game has been out for a couple days, you're starting to see people make actual servers. So that's how you get the multiplayer. You can also just create a server and give out that IP address to your friends, and then just you and your friends can go have a fun little time. And anything you do.
So I guess you're liking this one better than Tharsis.
Oh yeah, this one is so well done. There is so much, and you know, after. So, Some of the community has already started putting out mods, so they've already got, like, there's an old Nebula mod that worked on the last one, and it now works on this one too. So, you know, space looks really great, and there's people working on, you know, your cockpit view mods. There's people working on asteroid mods and planetary mods and space. So apparently, the modding community on this game is just ridiculous. So, and as I watch the guy's stream, I was watching his chat. Usually I turn chat off, but there's a couple of channels that I'll actually read chat. And there's like three people that have sunk in several thousand hours in some of the in the mercenary one, and were starting to play this, and just had this huge wealth of knowledge. And it was really interesting just to see what all they've done and see how they're like, well, you want to do this. Well, this is what you want to do if you're going to do space fighting. This is kind of the setup you want to do, and all that. So yeah, this was it was 15 20 bucks, something like that, for this one. But
it's not bad.
I mean, oh, and the file size for this is what else got me, is that, okay, so everybody was like, how big is it, how, you know, how large is the galaxy, right? The galaxy isn't enormous. We're not talking 400 billion star systems like what you have in Elite Dangerous. You have a couple small star systems, and you can still find planet Earth, and you can go fly around Saturn and all that jazz. But when I went to go down, because I'm hitting my bandwidth cap, I was like, okay, can I actually install this? And I went and looked, and it was like a 350 meg download. I was like, are you shitting me? Yep, 350. Well, it's highly compressed, but when I looked at it, it's like 500 megs off, eating off my hard drive.
Okay.
It is, yeah, and you start looking at that, and I'm like, your coding must be some pretty legit shit, because you've got just so much stuff going on, and there's all this crazy things, and flying down to planets, and it's procedurally generated that your planet's going to get, how your planet's going to look, and...
Well,
one guy did all the coding, the sound work, he brought in, like, two people to help him do some of the modeling. But, I mean, it's one dude that's been working on this. And it's Axiom Verge to a whole other level, just when you start thinking about, you know, it's a space sim and all the little nuances that he put in with the space sim. So, yeah, if you're a space sim fan, this is the way to go, man.
You talking about the guy that is playing for so many hours, made me think of probably my favorite space sim review on Steam. Is for Elite Dangerous, I think it's Horizons, where a guy had, you know, because Steam will have it logged in, you know, how many hours you've played when you give the review. Over 3,000 hours, not recommended.
Oh, there were so many people yesterday on the chat.
Like, I'm glad you've wasted 3,000 hours.
Just to figure out that this is not worth it.
Right.
Yeah. There are so many people trying to compare the two, and you really can't. Elite Dangerous has a massive development team behind it, and it's huge, and that's the way that it's meant to be. It's supposed to feel... I mean, space is lonely, right?
I have a feeling that you're more likely going to be able to compare Elite Dangerous with No Man's Sky. Maybe the better comparison.
Star Citizen.
Star Citizen?
Elite Dangerous to Star Citizen. For the space flight, Star Citizen is just a whole... I don't even know what the fuck they're doing anymore.
I don't think they know what they're doing, to be honest.
So you got Star Citizen. This game felt more like Evacron would be more No Man's Sky. But even, like, it's hard to tell because we haven't really seen a whole lot of gameplay come out from No Man's Sky. It's just been, here, we're going to land on this planet. And then we're going to do a little bit of shooting, and then we're done. So... I mean, until we actually see something come more substantial from No Man's Sky, which is really starting to worry me.
I just think that people are really excited about No Man's Sky, because to me, No Man's Sky doesn't look that intriguing. I mean, it's colorful, but I think Ross brought up a very valid point about it, and that he's like, okay, so it's procedurally generated, and there's, you know, billions of places you can go, but are half of them the same? Just, you know, go to this place and it's blue dinosaurs, and this place it's green, you know, stuff like that, which I kind of get. And I guess I'm also thinking, like, well, there's other games like Elite Dangerous that kind of, and now there's this one, and Star Citizen will be coming out, Maybe. And I guess what the appeal is of No Man's Sky is that console gamers want a space sim.
Well, Elite Dangerous is on Xbox One.
Yeah. But who has an Xbox One? I mean, you're all going to PS4.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah. I don't know. But hey, we're getting Space Sims finally, so.
I don't care. But, I mean, I know that that's a void that a lot of people
Wait.
Enjoy.
Let's scroll over here. Let's look at the date real quick. I do believe my Homeworld pre-order should be in now.
What pre-order did you do for Homeworld?
The new one.
Oh, the Deserts of Karak?
Yeah.
Yeah, Blake's reviewing that for me right now. He said it makes him want to cry.
Oh?
Yeah, he said it's been, you know, he hasn't played Homeworld the Remastered, and it's been a long time. He's like, man, this game pulls no punches. It's so mean.
Oh, Blake. All right, Carrie, we've been rambling for quite a while. Yes. I need some food, so take us home.
I need some food, too, and I need to go back to work, I guess, or something.
Or something.
All right, so if you have a question for us, as you can see, we have answered like a couple of questions. Someone asked me about Collector's Editions. Someone else asked me about Dark Souls 3. We do deliver when you ask us a question. So if you do have a question, there's something you would like us to talk about, you can email me at strategicguidereviews@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on this post or on the YouTube video. Of course, we ask that you subscribe to our YouTube videos so that you can get wonderful videos like these and unboxings and strategy guide reviews and all that wonderful stuff. If you don't want to look at our faces, we get it. You can always listen to our podcast on iTunes. And you can follow us. The site is at Strategy Reviews. Chris is at Starvin, and I am at Crunchy Chocobo. And of course, we thank you for watching and listening, and we ask that you keep on coming back to strategyguidereviews.com.
Yay.
Yay, jazz hands.
With that, remember, don't be a dick on the internet, because it's just assholery. Stop it. Stop it. Be nice. Be good on the internet. And with that, we're out. Peace.